So I'm Tom Rowe here in Studio C with Ricardo Robinson. And we're going to talk about you're the Waveform Artist in Resident this week. Live here, been working on a project you're calling Black Body White Noise.
What's up, Radio Land? Everybody across the nation on streaming right now. Good to be here. And would you like me to speak a little bit about the title?
Let's start earlier.
Okay.
And let's go way back. How did you get involved in art first?
Oh man, Tom.
That's a big question.
That's a huge question.
You can give us the elevator pitch version
nutshell. The nutshell.
Yeah, what other short thing?
I guess it all started when I auditioned for an art school to go into like middle school. So,
and where was this?
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Rogers School for the Performing Arts. So, you know, when you're a youth, you're just kind of like drawing and, you know, making things and things like that. But this was an institution awaiting, you know, my greatness. So it was like a school that was dedicated to art, you know. So I would say that was the first time that, you know, it came into my field of vision that, oh, snap, there's actually organizations and institutions out here that would like to cultivate that creative aspect of one's life. So, yeah.
So I guess that was...
That was sixth grade.
A great break, because a lot of... young kids don't even, that could have been artists, probably, you know, aren't even aware of the possibility.
That's true. Coming from Pittsburgh, there was a couple other options, you know, but they were more focused on, I guess, just traditional schooling or sports, you know, cultivating like athletes and things of that nature. Well, by the way, I was an incredible athlete back then, but my heart was pulling me in the direction of expressing its deeper, you know, selves, you know, Lavender Freddy and all. I have to pluralize it.
And that's probably a fight, because society kind of probably wants young men to do sports.
At that particular time, you know, in my, it wasn't so long ago. I'm still very much youthful. but yeah, that particular time, you know, there was a lot of, you know, you were kind of born with a ball in your hand. You had to go to the blue room and wear blue colors. And, you know, you had to wear an earring in your left ear and not your right ear. You know? Not to confuse, you know, people of your sexual preference or whatever, you know. So it was a very weird time for, just socialization.
And so how did your art manifest itself at first?
I went to Rogers for drawing and illustration. So that's what I auditioned for. And so that's visual. So I've always been really attracted to visual arts. Back in the day, it was just movies and, you know, cartoons and things of that nature. But as you get older and your vocabulary expands, you know, you try to make it sound a little bit more fancy and say things like, yeah, I was into the visual arts when I was, you know, 11 years old. But so I started off in the visual arts and then went into musical theater, you know, so was dancing on stage, you know, doing plays, and it was like Fame. You remember mm-hmm. them? Yeah, yeah. I Want to Live Forever.
It was like the movie or the TV show? It was like both.
It was like both. I wasn't as talented of a dancer as Leroy, but yeah, I had to wear the tights and go to dance class, and you know, well, actually, we wore sweatpants. You know, that's that left earring in the left ear sort of thing. Yes. You know, so but I wanted to wear those tights. I really did.
So we ask, I think, everybody this same question. Do you have an early radio memory, or was radio important to you as a young person?
Was it important to me? I would say my earliest, yes, I would say it was important. The station in my hometown was called WAMO, WAMO.
Those are great call letters.
I know, right? So they had this show on called The Quiet Storm. And back in the day, there was just a lot of music that really inspired or encouraged teenage love. You know, and I think there was a song called Teenage Love from Slick Rick or something like that. So during my teens, it was all about, you know, Quiet Storm. It had slow jams. It had like this sensitivity. It had these very incredible, you know, ballads of infidelity and betrayal. You know, I shouldn't have been listening to this shit at that time. But they started the program off with this song called Moments in Love by Art of Noise. And as I gotten older and started to like really listen to the Art of Noise, I guess I was always bound to be interested in noise and sound, and you know, because that's the jam. If anybody out there in radio land, look up Art of Noise, Moments in Love, and enjoy the ride. And the video's even more creative, you know. So yes, little plug.
All right, and then we'll jump ahead. When did like you start feel like you were an artist?
Okay. Why did I share the Art of Noise? Because that was my radio moment.
Right, we're talking about the radio moment.
That's when I was hugging the radio under the covers, listening to The Quiet Storm.
My story is listening to Baltimore Orioles games with the transistor radio under the pillow.
Okay. And we had walkie-talkies, you know, that's kind of close. It's definitely
transmissions.
Exactly, transmission, reception, and all that stuff. So, okay, so your next question was something about artists.
When did you consider yourself an artist? When did you really like feel like, oh, yes, I'm an artist?
Last night around 12 midnight, when I arrived here at Waveform, I was like, oh, shit, it's happening. But I did have a conscious moment of realizing the only thing you really have to do in order to be an artist, become an artist, is actually say I'm an artist. And that happened probably in the early 2000s, like around 2004 or so. I was in a rock band called Jackie's Platoon, but also on the side working on a very interesting album. Okay, a very interesting album called Conversations with Shepherd, Sheep, Guinea Pigs, and Monkeys, Nursery Rhymes for the Underfed Mind, Volume 1. And I was exploring folk music. So it was like a balance of rock and folk. And that's when I realized, like, oh, I'm a little different. So I might as well say I'm an artist, because that's the thing you say to, you know, to have people swallow that pill a little bit easier if you're doing very...
So there's a lot of negative terms that people throw at you if you're different, right?
For sure. So, yes, 2000, around 2003, 2004, I declared I am an artist. Yes.
And now, if you if people you find out you're an artist and they start talking to you, how do you describe what you do?
I say I'm a conceptual sound artist. And the word conceptual is extremely important because it's so flexible. It allows for me to exist. Allows for my art to exist in the realm of ideas. So whatever, you know, is born in that space, you know, it was conceptualized, you know, but I use the medium of sound to really articulate some things that I'm feeling, that I'm thinking about, you know, things of that nature. But you know what? Now that I think about it, I think the heart of my art is listening. And I've been speaking to friends about this as well. Like, listening is my art, but I don't know how to like write that in a grant yet, or, you know, but that's, I think that's the art, because I think the listener is always the composer, no matter how I manipulate the sounds, no matter, you know, what chords I may play, no matter how I design it, the way, whatever the listener brings to that moment of engaging in it with that sonic, you know, sculpture or whatever, they are the ones in charge of translating it, interpreting it. They're bringing so much to that moment. So the listener is always the composer, and listening is really my art.
And well, that works perfectly, I guess, with the current project you've been working on here, because you didn't compose notes. You set up a situation where sound happened, right?
So
you were listening to what the results were.
I did.
of your conceptual framework,
it's
right?
It's true. But what's interesting is that even with the sort of found sounds and the field recordings and the lack of controlling how the sound moves throughout the space, the cubes, the piece that I composed for that we're going to broadcast today, it is musical still. It still has this rhythm, because I smashed all the sounds together, and we got Root 23 that creates a nice drone. It's drone music, really, and it's meditative. So
that was a collaborator didn't know you were going to have until you got here, right?
Very true. Very true. Very true.
Root 23 is ever present in your.
So it's Black Body, White Noise, Root 23, which is inspiring me to also like. Take this these cast irons to different locations and just start to create a map of this project, you know. So
this project can go on the road.
Literally.
So the cast iron boxes, we explain the project so people get a visual picture in their head.
Okay. So this whole thing, I would say, is heavily inspired by an online persona that I have going on called Lavender Freddy. And they are working on a case called the Sunscreen Conspiracy.
Can people go somewhere online to find Lavender Freddy?
Yeah, Lavender Freddy has their own website, as well as like lavenderfreddy.com, but presenting everything on the Instagram platform. So it's Lavender Freddy Instagram, and that's Freddy, and Lavender. But this sunscreen conspiracy really opened up a sort of deluge of media. Lavender Freddy's job is to navigate throughout media history, find certain clips that still have, what can I say, relevance today, or some sort of connectivity to what's going on today. And all of the pieces are in conversation with Marvin Gaye's 1971 protest classic, What's Going On? And that's a question that I have heard throughout my entire existence. So I'm assuming that that question is going to be around for quite some time. So with that said, focusing on sunscreen conspiracy and focusing on, I guess, information about the sun or what's going on with studies of the sun from NASA or Harvard research groups and stuff like that, I learned about black body radiation. And that term itself, I was just like, whoa, I guess I wasn't paying attention in physics. But I heard the poetry in the title of that theory. And I started to study the theory of black body radiation. And I was like, huh, that would be an interesting, if I could simulate it or recreate the demonstration. I've seen others use boxes with a perforated hole and allowing, you know, different frequencies to hit on that black body. And then I started to think about, like, what is this in relation to white noise? So it just all started to really speak to me on so many different levels. And I still don't understand it. I'm not sure if light has a sound. I've seen people claim that light has a sound, but everyone that has done that has used some sort of converter, some sort of machinery that converts the light into a certain sonic palette that is already processed or created. So yeah, I'm still dreaming about the sound of sunlight. I'm still dreaming about the sound of many different abstract things in this world. What is the sound of love? What is the sound of freedom? What is the sound of, you know, hate? You know, all of these things can be explored sonically.
And here the sunlight is coming down and hitting the black box and causing the black box to make noise or sounds or.
So yes.
How would you describe it?
I would say that the sunlight does not have a sound that I was capable of hearing, but the sunlight, the objects that sunlight illuminates or sheds light on have that ability to heat up and go through some sort of thermal conduction, and then you can start to hear some activity that's going on. And that's what I attempted to do with the cast iron boxes. I wanted to record the sort of heating process. So when the sun wasn't sunlight wasn't strong enough for the project this week due to clouds and things of that nature, I simulated the sunlight and put the cast iron cubes onto a sort of grill and heated them up myself and got some pretty interesting sounds, which you're not really going to be able to hear in the piece, but there it's all there. It's just kind of all ambiance now.
And the piece is also has a literary inspiration?
Yes. I would say I was going to insert excerpts from Frantz Fanon's Black Skin, White Mask. And as I was, you know, revisiting the text this week, it didn't resonate with me the way it did in the past. The only space that it did resonate with me was just understanding the colonization and how the effects of colonization, and understanding the sort of psychological terrorism that colonization can create. So the title, I would say the title is inspired by, it's kind of like mirroring if a black skin, white mask was a sort of sound collage, it would be called Black Body, White Noise, only in relation to decolonization. So, yes.
And then you also, not just let the black box get hit by the sunlight, you also put the black boxes into the fire or yeah, into the coals, or I don't know how you want to describe it.
Yeah. Put them on the grill, heated them up, got some good heat. There was microphones inside of the cast iron cubes. I melted a couple contact microphones. I melted a couple wireless microphones. Interesting enough, it didn't really create drastic changes in the sound. There wasn't any, you know, explosions or pops or anything like that. So, yeah. So that's what I did.
And how much of all this, I mean, we're going to hear the piece shortly, but how much of all this is sort of like a metaphor for, or what's the metaphor here? Or is there a metaphor?
Oh, I think there is always a metaphor. If we're defining metaphor as something that is on the surface that represents something that could possibly exist behind it, or to the side or something like that. So, yes, there is a metaphor. And I think I'm learning what that metaphor is. But it has something to do with, how can I put it? It has something to do with control. It has something, the consciousness, there's a consciousness that is obsessed with control. There is a consciousness that is inspired by fear. And this consciousness tends to move throughout this world where it feels compelled to define everything, name everything, in order to manage the light that naturally falls and moves through everything and radiates through everyone. So yeah, the black body represents, it could represent people, it could represent basically anything that is able to absorb so much power and know its own power. And then the white noise is something that just feels the need to define it, give it form. It can't allow it to be free. And also it recognizes its power. It recognizes its energy. So yeah.
Was there anything that surprised you doing this project this week? Did you learn anything that you didn't think you were going to be discovering?
I would say I had a lot of time with myself and a lot of time with just like listening and just being on my own terms. So that freedom, that opportunity to have that kind of space, you know, it was a space that I had to face my own, explanation of things, you know, make sense out of things, But we have technology too, so I was able to reach out to a lot of, you know, wonderful people to bring them into dialogue about certain things. And so, yeah, like Michael Jackson says, you are not alone. You know, I am here with you, though you're far away.
I think that it sort of speaks to the piece, too. The sun is very far away.
Yes.
And it's sort of the energy force for everything, and definitely for sounds.
Yes.
If there was no sun, your black boxes would not be making any noises, right?
I don't think any of us would be making it.
Right.
So the sound of the sun light is everything, you know. That's you, Tom. You stumbled on that one.
All right. Well, we're going to hear things now. I have to walk upstairs to turn things on. But so why don't you
talk to the people?
Talk to the people and explain what the last thing you need them to know before they hear this piece.
Okay.
And then when I hear you finish your explanation, I'll turn you down and we will hear black body white noise.
Okay. And I can't hear you, so I will just you can text me real quick or something.
I'll stop on the floor when I get out.
Okay, sounds good. All right, everyone. Blah, 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 blah. Thank you for listening to all of that personal, beautiful mess of mine. And thank you, Wave Farm, for inviting my work here, you know, and offering me this artist residency. Beautiful space. I will be talking about it for years to come. All right. This is the premiere of Black Body, White Noise.
When I think of the outer space, I think of this idea of moving and the black body moving through space, and how that has always been restricted.
Black body moving through space.
Jiu-jitsu, whatever.
I love the music and the sound. Yes.
I love the music and the sound.
Do you understand what I'm saying? When you look at Isangoma, it's the child of the song, the spirit song, Ingoma. So, Sangoma, do you understand what I'm saying? So, Kasisutu e Kingaka, Kasizulu, Yanga. So, Kasisutu e Kingaka. So, Kasisutu e Kingaka.
So, Kasisutu e Kingaka.
Now, the point of the matter is the human spirit is no less complex.
I think what the colonial process does, or any process of domination.
Relativity theory and quantum mechanics.
Another curious tribe is the Samburu, living in the northern frontier district. They're a very primitive people who have no settled home.
Only rays that focus clearly can penetrate.
This is different. I like these.
You know, when I see a white person, a white man, or a white woman, the first thing I'll start thinking, what do that white person want from me?
How do you feel the anthropologist can apply all of this varied information to the understanding of, say, our own civilization?
What we have to do is to take each one of these societies as a kind of a laboratory in which we study some of the possibilities of human nature.
But we look at them and we say, oh, they don't have any bathrooms, so they're poor. And they would look at us and say, it's amazing that you can manage to live such anguished lives as you live.
When sun hits your skin, normally, what happens is it makes damage to your DNA in millionth of a millionth of a second.
I mean, you're not
what
supposed to be joyful. You're down there being lynched. what I'm looking for is, where can I go with you? Right? Repair. So I want to end with what could be under that dock if we had a transformed frame, because we can't get where we need to go from where we are right now.
Byproduct of 400 years of an intentional effort to destroy us, to erase our memory, to separate us from the land of our ancestors, and to make us believe that we are less than that truly than we truly are.
What would you want to see for the Indian
tribes?
Okay, freedom, but what? Better education, better
freedom.
Colleges?
Freedom. That's it.
So that's what density is all about, and that's what urban design is all about, and that's what, and that's why I feel like urban density should be just as core to the sort of political priorities of climate-concerned people as solar power is. As for the population thing, the larger population question I will put aside because I. Sticky wicket, but insofar as you're going to get more people, the best thing you can do is to cram them as close together as possible so that they share as much infrastructure as possible, so that they use as few, so that they produce as few emissions as possible per capita.
Now continue using the last switch on the board, please, the 450 switch to reach wrong answer. Continue.
I'm not getting no answer.
Please continue. The next word is white.
Look in on them, please.
Not once we've started the experiment.
Well, what if something's happened to me? I had an attack or something like that?
The experiment requires that we continue. The experiment requires that we continue. The experiment requires that we continue.
Right, or owning a slave. No one here thinks about owning a slave. Elizabeth Colbert?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think people have a long time, you know, when I was writing field notes, I interviewed a scientist at Princeton, Rob Socklow, and he made the point to me, you know, look, this is like slavery. At a certain point, there will be, you know, and things will flip, and emitting carbon will come to seem, you know, bad.
What we find is that in this information age, something that John Arquillo wrote a couple of decades ago is probably more true than even when he first wrote it, which is that when you ask in political contests, traditionally, who would win? The answer was the side with the biggest army would win. But in today's world, sometimes it's the side with the best story that wins.
It doesn't mean people have no stories to tell. People have bags and bags of stories to tell.
So the beauty of this this work was lost on these people because they were afraid. You know, they were afraid that if people saw, you know, essentially all this unstoppable joy.
So therefore, this is what we must do, do you see? We must learn how to take ourselves very, very seriously. Do you see? We must learn how to respect ourselves. We must learn how to respect one another.
And in my mind, there is no greater or more powerful way of experiencing hauntings, contaminations, place, and history than by listening. Listening is a posture that generates an awareness of space and time.
There in those pleated faces, I see the auction block, the chains and slavery's coffles, the whip and lash and stock. My father's speaking voices that shred my fact and sound.
My patternists are people, a gathering of mutants, really. They're not extraterrestrial or anything, and they're not gathered for any particularly good purpose. They're gathered because a rather odious character is lonely.
I weighed all of this.
I weighed all of this.
It's happened to everybody who's tried to live. You know, you go through your life for a long time, you think that.
It gives you more sense of structure about where you may be going. We don't really know that either. But it is comforting. It is sort of like a foundation under you to know what went before you.
Well, what about the sisters who don't agree with you,
I'm not going to preoccupy myself in terms of what will happen to them, because I know that more people are preoccupied with freedom. No one wants to be a slave.
The hardest thing to be an Indian is to go into the sweat lodge daily, to live the life of our ancestors. That's what he meant. Because it's so easy to be white. It's so easy to go out and get a job and become concerned only with money. And then you start building fences around your house. And you start building fences around your cities. And start building fences around your states. Start building fences around your country. And all this time you're building only a fence around yourself. And that's the fault of the white man. He is by himself. He lives by himself. He has no relatives. He even goes so far as to leave the land of his ancestors, to leave the burial places of his forefathers. He has no respect, so he is isolated.
If you look at society as simply the collective contribution of millions of human beings who carry in themselves certain power and influence and emotion, and every time you turn the switch off of one of those persons, you've dampened the glow.
Mean to have to create oneself from scratch in environments where one is not supposed to exist.
Now, we must be ready for a new danger, the atomic bomb. First, you have to know what happens when an atomic bomb explodes. You will know when it comes. We hope it never comes, but we must get ready. It looks something like this. There is a bright flash, brighter than the sun, brighter than anything you've ever seen.
We, as blacks, we have something which is very unique. Now, there was a fear of the sun. You see, the sun has given us a seed. We have that thing in our body which is known as the melanin, which links us up to the ultraviolet rays of the sun, so we can't get skin cancer when we are, even when the sun's rays are 100 degrees, no, we don't have.
Knowledge has but one purpose. Its purpose is to alleviate the sufferings of humanity. Capitalism is a backward and stupid system. Capitalism is a contemptuous system. Capitalism is a system made on profit. It will make a commodity out of everything.
Now, it is absurd to say that we Africans were not in Africa when white people first came. And secondly, the conqueror writes history. They came, they conquered, and they wrote.
Of the savage. We begin at the end of the 15th century, and we end this exhibition in 1958. In the beginning, in this 16th, 17th, and 18th century, it's just fascination. There is no hierarchy. There is, well, it's wonder. These are miracles. Eh? They are shown as miracles. In the 19th century, just at the beginning of the 19th century, the vision of the other on the other will change. It is the century of the making of racial theorists, and that's you see here.
Views on the relationship between race and intelligence changed?
No, not at all. I would like for them to change, that there be new knowledge which says that your nurture is much more important than nature. But I haven't seen any knowledge, and there's a difference on the average between blacks and whites on IQ tests. I would say the difference is it's genetic.
Great heroes of our people came out of our church. Great heroes of our people came out of our church. We are extremely highly organized. We are extremely highly organized.
I think hard times are coming when we will be wanting the voices of writers who can see alternatives to how we live now and can see through our fear-stricken society and its obsessive technologies.
Maniac, an animal. That was the reason for it.
Could he be violent?
Only if people were violent to him. I can be violent also, and I imagine so can you. You see, that's the whole story of America. They take their violence and turn it back around on somebody else.
Talked about zombies so much out there and the sex wars.
Well, I never heard you talk about them, did you, Vincent?
No, I haven't.
Talk about the zombie just a wee little bit.
Well, a zombie is supposed to be the living dead. People who die and are resurrected, but without their souls. And they can take orders, and they're supposed to be never to be tired, and to do what the master says without cease and without being tired. Naturally, it would be futile for me to attempt to try to explain everything. I do know that people have been resurrected in Haiti. I do not believe that they were actually dead. I believe it was suspended animation.
I don't see how you can have this rallies and everything against the white man. This is America, you know.
I mean, let me just say something to this call. This is not America. This is Polynesia. Our country was stolen. That's one of your problems. You're ignorant, woefully ignorant.
Sims and the enslaved women and Narka Betsy and Lucy, you know, look as if, you know, that there is some trepidation. And Narka looks as if she's clutching her chest in modesty. The other enslaved women are allowed to peer behind a white curtain while the two medical assistants are also, you know, gazing and pondering what to do.
The eccentric, the extreme, the excluded, the ex-con, the exiled, the expelled, the never meant to survive, extinct, yet stay, awoke, exist, exert, expand, excite, the Malcolms, the Harriets, the Ninas, the Native Sons, Exodus, Zika.
Visible light from the sun passes through the atmosphere and reaches the Earth's surface. UVA, long-wave ultraviolet, is the closest to visible light. Most UVA also reaches the surface, but shorter wavelengths.
Melanin is a versatile
UVB
molecule.
Are the harmful rays.
Not
that
only
cause
is it
sunburn
responsible for giving us our UV blocking complexion.
Much of the thinking is based on feedback and control systems. Let's look at the evolution of work. In the beginning, there was manpower.
And unforeseen by you in Brave New World.
I think it is the greatest story ever told.
That the sun is born each
and ultimately morning dies at night, and then emerges the next morning and bring life back again, but then dies again. And so the whole story is on the subjects of the whole universe and how our skies work and how the planets work.
Firstly, that the time and development and discipline of geology is contemporaneous with the time of slavery and the construction of racial difference. Geologic theories are used to consolidate racial difference and geographical execution, so the theft of indigenous land and theft of Africans.
Okay, we're going to look now at the idea of black body radiation.
A perfect black body absorbs all of the radiation incident on it.
Yeah, it also points to, for me, that there's a set of larger struggles there. There's a legacies there. When people talk about reparations, when they talk about reservations, all of the ways that we talk about land and how we're going to deal with the pain of the past here in the present, I think that's another commonality, and I think we have to figure out how to talk about that and hold that.
The soul is not an entity that has a start and an end. The soul is in constant orbital mode between the land of the ancestors and the land of the tribe.
That we've arranged a society based on science and technology in which nobody understands anything about science and technology. And this combustible mixture of ignorance and power, sooner or later, is going to blow up in our faces. I mean, who is running the science and technology in a democracy if the people don't know anything about it?
And what sad ethical condition are we in when it seems like when everybody has to do the same thing? Why does now everybody have to do the same thing? And people constantly writing these articles, you know, the state of this discipline, the state of that discipline. And it's always from the position, unspoken or not, that everybody should be doing the same thing. And whoever ain't doing the thing that I'm getting ready to say we should be doing is wrong. It's like, no, that's just stupid. You know, it's just ridiculous, actually. And it's, you know, so there's a bunch of different ways, a bunch of different attitudes, a bunch of different dispositions that are necessary in order to try to provide something that would approach an adequate description of who and what we are and who and what we might be.
I trust what Prince said. We're all just the same. Life is but a game. It's a war of vibrations. Construct your reality. Think about the things you love and draw them into your life.
When a shaman or a healer or a babalawo notices that healing, that the person's health is entangled with the person's sickness, he cuts the body open. I think we need cracks and openings. We are addicted to the highway. The highway is leading to nowhere interesting, but that's all modernity can offer us. And now we need to get lost in order to find a new way. A different way.
We just have to tell our stories so that history will not always and forever be seen from the point of one side.